Thank you for joining me for our latest installment of TV Madness with Makisha Madden-Toby. I'm your host, Makisha Madden-Toby. On today's show, I'll be talking to journalist, filmmaker, and author Janice Rochelle Littlejohn about interracial relationships on television, particularly those with African-American women, which we don't see that much of. Littlejohn co-wrote in the new book, Swirling, How to Date, Mate, and Relate, Mixing Race, Culture, and Creed. And she wrote it with co-author Crystalyn D. Karazin. The book, which is from Atria, will be available on store shelves in May and retails for about $10.98, right? Okay, good. Welcome to the show, Janice Littlejohn.
Thank you, Makisha. It's great to be here.
Now, do people usually say Janice Rochelle, or do they just say... Because I always just call you Janice.
Everybody calls me Janice. People call me Rochelle. People call me Janice Rochelle. I've even gotten J. Rose.
I like that. I might have to take that. So what made you write the book?
Crystalyn had come to me and was interested in having me participate in this book. She's married to a Caucasian fellow, and they've been married for about 10 years now. Okay. And she knew that I had dated outside of my race and outside of my culture and thought that I had something to say. And at first I thought, no, I don't want to do this.
No, why did you think that?
I think it was partially for selfish reasons. I didn't want to co-author a book. I wanted to do a book on my own. I felt like I had been a journalist long enough I could write my own book. And but I, right around the same time that she asked me to do it, I had read a study about how African-American women were least likely to date outside their race and culture, and
that's
that were least likely to marry of any gender or racial group. Hmm. And I began wondering why this was, and it was, these were studies that I had been reading over the last decade or more. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to explore it in a journalistic kind of way and infuse my own stories and stories of people that I knew and people that we could get to participate, to really explore why this was and to really start encouraging Black women to find their happiness wherever mm-hmm. they could. So mm-hmm. that was really the reason why I decided to do it, because I felt like Black women are beautiful and they need to find love. And why is this part of the American dream so elusive at this point? So,
well put. In chapter 12, you talk about the image of African-American women, or lack thereof, on shows such as The Bachelor. Now, why do you think there haven't been any African-American bachelors or bachelorettes? This is a loaded question, so I'm going to, I'll break it up.
Well,
I'll ask you that part first.
I'm still very perplexed as to why there aren't. But I do know television very well, and producers are trying to cater to the greatest common denominator mm-hmm. and pull viewers in with as many people as they can. But to say that Black women or Black men should not be viable candidates for a bachelorette or a bachelor is still beyond me. I think, if nothing else, it would create some enthusiastic ratings numbers.
I think so. And I think that these aren't great examples, but something like Flavor of Love showed that even though it was a complete cartoon, that as a Black man, he was looking for, his version of love. God, I don't want to overstate it. But he was a Black bachelor in that sense.
And I think
people watched. It had great ratings.
People watched, and we're talking the difference between cable ratings also.
True.
Versus broadcast ratings. And so Flavor of Love is definitely more of a niche and can cater to a different kind of demographic. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at is, what I look at in the book is broadcast, because it's still by and large is what people watch mostly. It's what gets the most traction,
exactly.
The highest ratings and that kind of thing, highest viewership. And so what is important to me in this particular chapter and what I wanted to discuss is that there is, when we're not there, mm-hmm. it is a lot more polarizing because then we are not seen as desirable mm-hmm. or desired. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that in any given season, and it's not just African-Americans, to be quite honest, it's all women of color. When you take a look at any season of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette,
women, exactly.
any season of The Bachelor, there may be maybe one Black woman, maybe one Asian woman, maybe one Latina.
And when you watch, you know, without saying, I think people, most people know, even, I mean, viewers of all races would have to admit that when you see those people, they're not going to be the finalists.
Right.
It doesn't come down to those two.
They're not in the top.
They're not in the top.
Not in the top 10. So I think the thing is that media images are important in the context of not only how we see ourselves, but how others see us.
Exactly.
And so when we are talking about interracial romance and intercultural romance and even interfaith romance, where do we fit as Black women in the cultural zeitgeist, in the media zeitgeist of prominence and of desirability and allure? So that's why I wanted to address that.
I thought it was really interesting in the book, and you talked to Jennifer Posner, founder and director of Women in Media and News in New York, and she talked about Shonda Rhimes, which I'll preface this by saying I don't want to beat up Shonda Rhimes because that's not fair, because she's in this really rarefied position as a showrunner with multiple shows on the air.
Okay? And she's an African-American woman.
And she's an African-American woman.
Yes.
Okay.
It's very significant.
Very significant. But on her shows, typically, as we saw with Dr. Bailey on Grey's Anatomy and Audra McDonald's character on Private Practice, these women aren't portrayed as having any sexuality, really. Mm. I mean, in one instance, you know, Dr. Bailey's sort of more of a, like a mother hen type character. I guess she's like the doctor over the residence or something like that.
Right.
Whatever her title is. And then on Private Practice, to a lesser extent, but still it was an issue because ultimately Taye Diggs leaves Audra McDonald, they divorce, and he ends up with Kate Walsh's character.
You know, exactly. Like,
because, you know, and that was a constant, seemingly constant thread through the storyline, their storyline as a couple, like that they weren't really getting it on enough.
You're right.
You know, so it's like, well, why isn't Shonda Rhimes, as a Black woman, portraying these women as having urges or being sexual, or as all women are of all colors, right?
I mean, I'd like to be able to ask Shonda Rhimes that question, quite frankly, and wasn't able to. But
she turned down your interview request for the book.
Well, I had tried to get an interview with her and was not
successful.
But one of the things that is curious to me is it Shonda Rhimes' decision? Is it a network decision?
Right.
Or does it feed into this larger cultural idea of who is seen as desirable? And by and large, African-American women still aren't seen as the desired person. We have so many stereotypes of when you look at the help and the mammy roles, or when you look at something like Flavor of Love and the women are by and large gold diggers or Jezebels or sexually. I don't know if there is a show on the air right now on broadcast television that really gives you a three-dimensional look of who African-American women are. I do want to say that
Claire Huxtable was probably the most evolved, maybe the character on Bernie Mac's show. I mean, there's a small group of women,
but you know, and I think about it when The Cosby Show first came out, one of the comments from critics, both Black and white, was this was not realistic, that this was not...
That they were affectionate?
That this kind of family unit, that this kind of relationship between Bill and... between Cliff and Claire was a pristine kind of look at an African-American life. And I revisited it that a few years ago for Emmy Magazine, just looking at the fact that even a favorable, loving relationship between an African-American doctor and his lawyer wife would be seen as unrealistic. it's almost as we can laugh about it now, but I think it's something that is continually perpetuated throughout our culture. And one of the things that's interesting now about having an African-American woman in the White House as our first lady.
And they're very affectionate, right?
And the fact that they're very affectionate.
And smile and kissing.
But people, and it really does speak to what's going on in largely in our society of how we're now looking at women and talking about Black women and what Black women want and what Black women need and those kinds of things. Because in our First Lady, we do have, I remember before Obama was elected, there was a Radar magazine ad on why we are so scared of her. Because the thing was, is that no one understood who Michelle Obama was, not only as a woman, but as an African-American woman. She was an attorney. She had two children. She was married to a very high profile.
Is that unrealistic? Is her life?
Exactly.
It's her life.
And that's the thing. We don't see enough of our images, the diversity of our images, neither on television or on the big screen, for us to, as a culture, as a larger culture, understand who we are. Although we have been a part of the fabric of this country since its beginning. And I think what I want to do with the book that's very important is to start a dialogue, because I don't want this book to be seen as, oh, we can ignore race and we can ignore culture.
And let's just date and mate and have
fun. Just date and mate and have fun. There are things that we need to talk about. When you have the Trayvon Martin case very prevalent in our in the news these days, race does matter. Culture does matter. The thing that I want to be able to do is bring us to a point of dialogue so we can discuss and understand one another without the tension.
And I think there's a desire for that. I think for most people to understand who they're talking to and what they're talking about. And
We just have to start talking. and opportunities like this give us a chance to talk about what we think about African-American women ourselves, what we think of African-American men, what we think of white men, what we think of Asian men. I mean, the chapter does go into a lot of talk about our sexual stereotypes.
It's a great chapter.
So
it's a great book.
Thank y'all. So it's really important to start having these discussions and talking about these things and how they're presented and in television and in film.
Wow. Well, last question before we go. We talked about happy endings. You and I were talking about this before the show, and sort of the Jane and Brad characters, which I would argue are two of the, I think, I would say their relationship is one of the best on television for of any kind, particularly for an interracial couple. Want to talk to you about that, as well as sort of why don't we see black women in roles like that, that the role that Brad, the role of Brad, sort of, I guess, intermingling and sort of really being comfortable in his skin and dating and or he's married to Jane. But I mean, having that relationship without it being an issue that they beat you over the head with. I mean, they talk about race, but it's not overt. And then sort of to go back to other things like Helen and Tom Willis on the Jeffersons and Parenthood, like. Not to throw too much out there, but...
Well, I think, interestingly enough, with Parenthood, you bring that up. There is a black woman, Jasmine, and Crosby, who is a white man, who I think the last episode that I saw actually got married finally.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's interesting about that that I point out and have had discussions with Eric Deggans, who is at the Tampa Bay Times... who is an African American man married to a white woman, and one of the things that we talk about a lot is the fact that these relationships exist in television, but they're never discussed. And the thing that is interesting about, say, Happy Endings versus the relationship in Parenthood is that the character that Damon Wayans plays seems very organic into the friendship and the kind of camaraderie that
he would be friends with these people.
He would be friends with these people because even though he's African American, he does have this kind of pop culture white boy kind of thing going on where he fits. Versus the Jasmine and Crosby situation, that relationship has been so riddled with conflict and divisiveness, and you try to figure out, well, why do these two people even like each other beyond sexual tension and the fact that they had a
child
kid together? And so, you know, they're of different backgrounds and different religious upbringings and all those kinds of things. And those things matter. And those things would be discussed in the context of a relationship.
Right.
Because as much as we have differences, the thing that's really important is to find the commonalities and the similarities between those two people.
Right.
And I have not yet seen in the context of Jasmine and Crosby's relationship why it is
they
would be together.
Yeah. And now married.
So it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's good to see, but to ignore the fact that they are from different races and different cultures
is a disservice.
It's a disservice and it's avoidance. Yeah. It feels very much like avoidance. And I know that producers are looking to reach out to the broadest audience that they can. And they're not looking to hit any social or, right. or political buttons. But I think that if we look at shows like The Jeffersons with the Willises, or even All in the Family, shows like that that hit and directly talked about what was going on in the social in a social context, mm-hmm. really then speak to and help us start talking openly about it,
right.
and really engaging with one another in a way that is not argumentative, but a kind of water cooler. What did you think about this?
Yeah.
And I have an understanding about this, but I don't know why you press your hair and why and why you have dreadlocks. You know, I mean, those things come up.
You hope they come up.
And it's one of those things where unless we
It's okay if they come up.
It's okay.
People don't always really, it's okay.
It's okay to talk about it because you never know.
How would
unless
you know?
Unless you talk
How
about
would you
it.
Know?
So, exactly. So it's just, I think the thing is that it's important for us to begin to have dialogues, not only between the races, but between the genders.
Yeah.
And so that, in the end, is what this book is all about. And for a whole bunch of Black women to start finding love wherever they can.
I hope so. I have so many friends that want to hook up with people. And then I'm like, I don't know. Let me leave that alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I hope so. This is a really cool book. And I'm hoping people, at least, if nothing else, if they don't go out and date like crazy, at least they'll talk about it, you know, and talk about the possibility or at least imagine the possibility.
Yeah, but date like crazy. I think that's great. Date like crazy. Find some love.
I love it.
That's what it's all about.
I love it. Thank you for doing the show, Janice. You're awesome.
Thank you, Makisha.
And that's our time swirling. How to Date, Mate, and Relate, Mixing Race, Culture, and Creed. Hit store shelves May 12th. Thank you again for doing the show.
Thank you.
And I got to thank Leo. You guys don't even know. It's crazy. NPR West, our graphic artist, Adam Janice, and he is also our production assistant. He's amazing, and you just love Adam. Adam is wonderful. And our sponsor, Record Surplus in Santa Monica, the last record store. Visit recordsurplusla.com. Thanks for listening.